Hello and welcome to our quarterly podcast discussing the activities to support consistent application. Now, this podcast covers the discussions at the November 2023 meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee. My name is Bruce McKenzie, and I'm a member of the International Accounting Standards Board and chair of the IFRS Interpretations Committee. I'm here today with John Nelson and Jens Freyberg, who are members of the committee. Now, at its November meeting, the committee finalized one agenda decision relating to the accounting for merger transactions and separate financial statements, discussed two new submissions, one relating to operating segments and the other about climate-related commitments, and provided input into two of the ISP's projects, being provisions and power purchase agreements. Now, the meeting papers and a recording of the committee's discussions are available on our website. We'll focus our discussions today on the two new submissions. So let's get started with the new submission about climate-related commitments. John, do you want to give us an overview of the question?
Sure, Bruce, and hello to everybody that's listening. This was a topical question about the accounting implications of net zero and similar climate-related commitments. Specifically, the question asked to the committee was whether by announcing a type of a commitment, a net zero commitment, the company incurs a constructive obligation to fulfill it, and if so, whether IAS 37 would require the company to record in its financial statements a provision or liability for that constructive obligation. We considered a fact pattern in which a company commits to being net zero by the end of the decade by doing two things. The first is to gradually change its manufacturing methods over the course of the decade to reduce its annual CO2 emissions by at least 60%. And then second, offsetting any remaining CO2 emissions that it continues to emit after the end of the decade by purchasing and retiring carbon credits.
Okay, so the first part of the question was about whether the announcement creates a constructive obligation. What conclusions did the committee reach on this?
Well, we noted that if a company publishes a statement indicating to the public or to its stakeholders that it will accept certain responsibilities, well, that it has a constructive obligation to discharge those responsibilities if the statement creates a valid expectation that it will do so. So announcing a net zero commitment could give rise to a constructive obligation to the public at large if the announcement creates a valid expectation among the public that the company will fulfill this commitment. And we concluded that whether a net zero commitment creates such an expectation will depend on the facts and circumstances. For example, it could depend on the language used in describing the commitment. An announcement describing the actions that the company will take or that it pledges to take may be more likely to give rise to a constructive obligation than an announcement that describes the company's targets or ambitions. And this means that the company's management would have to apply judgment in determining whether the net zero commitment gives rise to a constructive obligation or not. If the company concludes that its announcement does not create a constructive obligation, well, then the company does not need to recognize a provision.
So what happens if the company concludes its announcement creates a constructive obligation? I mean, does it automatically then have to recognize a provision?
No, not automatically. Meeting the definition of a constructive obligation is not enough to trigger the recognition of a provision. It's also necessary to consider whether the obligation meets the criteria in IAS 37 for recognizing a provision. Particularly notable here are the requirements that the obligation is a present obligation that arises from past events, and that it's probable an outflow of resources will be required to settle the obligation. We concluded that in the fact pattern that we considered, the company's commitments to modify its manufacturing methods would not satisfy these criteria, most notably because it wouldn't require a net outflow of economic resources. Modifying manufacturing methods could involve, for example, buying energy from renewable sources or replacing existing equipment with new, more energy efficient equipment. In each case, the company would have to pay out cash, but it would receive other resources in exchange, for example, new energy or new equipment. There would be an exchange of resources, but not a net outflow of resources. We then considered whether the company's commitment to offset its remaining emissions by buying and retiring carbon credits would satisfy the criteria for recognizing a provision. And we concluded that this commitment would satisfy the criteria, but only once the company has emitted the CO2 that it has committed to offset. And only then would the obligation be a present obligation In the fact pattern that we considered, the company had committed to offset only the CO2 it continues to emit after the end of the decade. Only when it emits that CO2 might it have a present obligation. All of the committee members agreed with this analysis, so we were able to reach a conclusion that the requirements in IAS 37 provide an adequate basis for determining whether and when to recognize provisions for net zero commitments. Firstly, whether a company's net zero commitment gives rise to a constructive obligation will depend on the facts and circumstances. And second, even if the commitment gives rise to a constructive obligation, the company doesn't necessarily recognize the provision at that time, at the time of the announcement. In the fact pattern that we considered, the company would only recognize a provision for the cost of offsetting CO2 emissions and only when it has emitted the CO2 that it has committed to offset. And that wouldn't happen until years after it made the announcement.
So what you're saying is that in many, perhaps most cases, the announcement of a net zero commitment does not trigger the recognition of a provision. But the commitment could have other implications for the financial statements, couldn't it?
Yes, and I think that's quite an important point. Even if making a net zero commitment doesn't result in a provision, well, it might affect the financial statements in other ways. It could affect the amounts at which the company recognizes other assets and liabilities, or the information that it discloses about the assumptions underlying their amounts. Suppose, for example, that the company that plans to change manufacturing methods, and that this means it will replace existing equipment sooner than previously planned. Well, the company would need to review the depreciation period for those existing assets, and perhaps recognize an impairment loss related to the carrying value of that of those assets.
So where do we go from here on this topic?
Well, having concluded that IAS 37 provides an adequate basis on which to determine whether and when to recognize a provision for a net zero commitment, we decided not to add a project on this topic to the work plan. We've published a tentative agenda decision explaining our decision, and this is open for comment until the 5th of February. We will consider comments that we receive at a future meeting before reaching a final decision.
Thanks, John. Now let's move on to the second new submission the committee discussed, which is related to the disclosure of revenues and expenses for reportable segments. Now the committee spent a lot of time discussing this question. Jens, perhaps you can explain what the committee discussed and what it concluded.
Yeah, sure, Bruce. The committee, so we, discussed a request about an important topic, segment reporting. And in particular, the committee, so we discussed the requirements in IFRS 8 operating segments for an entity to disclose for each reportable segment specified amounts related to segment profit or loss. The submitter of the request noted diversity in its jurisdiction on several questions about disclosure of specified amounts related to segment profit or loss. The committee, so we, observed that there were two main aspects to the questions raised. The first related to the requirements of paragraph 23 of IFRS 8 to disclose for each reportable segment specified amounts included in segment profit or loss reviewed by the Chief Operation Decision Maker, or CODM for short. Specifically, the question asked whether an entity is required to disclose specified amounts in paragraph 23 if those amounts are not separately reviewed by the CODM. And the second related to the meaning of material items of income and expense in the context of paragraph 97 of IAS 1, as referenced in paragraph 23F of IFRS 8.
And what were the committee's observations on these questions?
Yeah, the committee observed that the lead-in to paragraph 23 of IFRS 8, which sets out when an entity is required to disclose specified amounts, includes the word or. This means an entity is required to disclose specified amounts by reportable segment first, when those amounts are included in the measure of segment profit or loss reviewed by the CODM, even if those amounts are not separately reviewed by the CODM. Now, the word or, when those amounts are regularly provided to the CODM, even if they are not included in the measure of segment profit or loss.
Thanks, Jens. And what did the committee observe about the material items of income and expense?
We had a lengthy discussion on this one, Bruce. So the committee observed that when IAS 1 refers to materiality, it's an important question. It is in the context of information being material. An entity applies judgment in considering whether disclosing or not disclosing information in financial statements could reasonably be expected to influence decisions of users of those financial statements. The committee also observed that in applying paragraph 23F of IFRS 8, an entity first assesses whether the disclosure of information is material in the context of its financial statements taken as a whole, so a broad view. Second, applies the requirements in IAS 1 in considering how to aggregate information in the financial statements. Third, considers both qualitative and quantitative factors, representing the nature or magnitude of information, or both, in assessing whether an item of income and expense is material. And fourth, considers an item of income and expense for disclosure without regard to whether that item is presented or disclosed, applying a requirement in IFRS accounting standards, other than paragraph 97 of IAS 1.
So, what was the outcome of the committee's discussion?
After a lengthy and lively discussion on this topic, the committee concluded that the principles and requirements in IFRS accounting standards provide an adequate basis for an entity to apply the disclosure requirements in paragraph 23 of IFRS 8. And consequently, the committee decided not to add a standard setting project to the work plan and instead has published a tentative agenda decision on this topic open for public comment.
Thanks very much, Jens. So the tentative agenda decision that was referred to is up for comment until the 5th of February, and we look forward to hearing from our stakeholders. Now, if you want to learn more about the committee and how it works and why you need to consider agenda decisions, you can watch our new video on our website, which explains this process. Now, as a reminder, you can also catch up on previous episodes of this and the IASB podcasts on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and on Spotify. For the latest developments, make sure you subscribe on our website. With that, say thank you very much to Jens and John for joining me, and thank you for taking time to listen. We'll chat to you after the next one. Take care.